Welcome to the Montreal Bias, a production of RabbitHabs.com. I'm Zach. That fellow with me on the other end of the line in our nation's capital, that's Sean O'Neill. How you doing, buddy?
Good, buddy. How are you?
Pretty good. Pretty good. It's been an emotional couple weeks for us, I think, with the PK Subban return in Montreal.
Yeah.
So that'll be a big part of what we're talking about, I think, on this one.
Yeah, that was let's just hop into it. What'd you think?
Yeah, I got a little emotional. Not as emotional as PK. Oh wait, sorry. I forgot that I was gonna come in hard with my real take, but the take I've been putting on this podcast. PK Subban, what a crybaby.
I know.
Glad we don't have him. You think Shea Weber's ever shed a tear?
I know he didn't in his first game back in Nashville.
No, because he is mountains, and mountains don't cry.
He got close. The lip quivered, but he didn't ball like a little bitch like PK did.
Yeah, PK's a little bitch. No, it was he got emotional. I think the fans gave the welcome back he absolutely deserved, and they deserved, and it was nice. And then, we'll jump right into 76-6, the horse race. This is the last one we ever have to do. Montreal beat Nashville both times this year. So Montreal wins the trade forever. It's perfect.
I'd say so.
It's over. That's the end of that bit was great.
It's over.
For
I fought a good fight for a while, but I mean, I can't fight that logic.
No, you got to admit when it's over. A, Montreal beat Nashville twice in the regular season, proving that they won the trade. And B, as we pointed out, PK Subban's a little bitch. So. Oh, God. And then, I don't know, who's ripping us off this week? Bill Simmons has a podcast, apparently. Pretty sure he had one well before us. Logic for PK Subban to really feeling bad about it. It's an awesome interview with PK. If you're a Subban fan, and I assume if you listen to this podcast, you probably are, I would say go listen to it. He's so goddamn good.
Yeah, and I mean, eventually I'll probably get over this trade. Sort of ish,
you know.
You just see what highlight video he sent off the ice
the other day, and I think he was
what? I was just saying hi to you.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
When you have one listener, you can call them by name. That's the nice bit. With me the other day, we were talking like watching those highlight videos. What was your favorite moment? For me, that's forever and ever is always going to be that breakout out of the box, the penalty box against Boston in that playoff series.
Yeah, there was that one, and there was the overtime winner against Boston. In the playoffs as well.
Yeah, they were nice.
But yeah, that breakout, like, and this isn't really hindsight speaking, like that breakout as it was happening felt like, holy crap, this is something we're going to remember for a long time.
Oh yeah, immediately.
It was an amazing goal at an amazing moment that felt historic in real time. And you know, at the time we thought there was going to be another 30 of these moments with him in a Habs sweater, but that was kind of, you know, that was one of the last ones.
Yeah, and for me, that's what I think was kind of cemented in that tribute moment was like, again, and obviously we talked about this ad nauseum over the summer and even early in the season, but it was just like, oh man, I really thought that we were building a lengthy, lengthy legacy of this and instead got cut off so early.
Yeah, it felt like there was going to be, you know, they drafted him and you saw him come up and you saw him grow into the player that he turned into. And it like you said, it seemed like, you know, he signed that 8-year deal. It seemed like he was going to be there forever and he wanted to win a cup there and he built the hospital and it just seemed like it was going to be one of those rare.
Built a hospital by himself, by the way.
Yeah. He built brick in the off season. That's why he's in such good shape.
Exactly. It was him piling bricks and Instagramming himself shirtless, working in the heat, building a hospital. And then hand carrying each child in and put them in their bed one by one and gave them some cash as well.
And some of the Morgans, if I remember correctly.
I think so. I think he gave away a couple. Oh man,
even though there were always rumors, it seemed like he was going to stay there, if not forever, for a long, long time, and there would be more and more memories, but it turned out it was kind of a short love affair.
Yeah, it was. And you know, one of the things that watching that game against Nashville that bothered me more than anything was Carey Price doing the playful water squirt at him. And I'm like, look, Carey Price obviously liked him. So if Carey liked him and he clearly wasn't, I think it was a divided locker room as we've talked about over and over again, but if Price was still on his side, come on.
I mean, if you have Carey and PK, you keep those two and get rid of everyone else.
Yeah, honestly, you could.
I mean, seriously, those are the two most important pieces on the team by far.
What about, come on, Captain College? Come on.
He's good again this year.
He is having a hell of a season. Credit there for sure.
I know. There's an alternate universe, though, where they trade Pacioretty and not see, like, you know, they trade Pacioretty for Weber and just this team is a lot different and Habs history is a lot different.
And when is that ebook coming out that you're working on exactly? That would be amazing. Just, it's fan fiction. I think you should write it.
Fan fiction about this alternate universe where I go back in time and convince Mark Bergevin to trade Pacioretty.
I say that's what Rabbit Habs becomes now. It's just fan fiction where we write about scenarios that of other things happening. I'll write a couple short essays about if Kreider had missed Carey Price and the Habs go on. There's a lot to work with here.
There is.
Maybe some Patrick Roy never gets traded. Oh boy, we're going to cut this podcast short right now. We got to get to the old typewriters. Get working on this thing. Oh, speaking of on the pod coming up, and we will be a little shorter, you and I, today because we've got Mark Gretschmel on as well, and he was director of a documentary that's on iTunes now, The California Golden Seal Story. So we'll be talking to him for a little bit about making that documentary, and him speaking to Wayne Gretzky, and he talks about how the Golden Seals almost got Guy Lafleur. So a lot of good stuff coming up in that one. So skip right ahead probably is the best solution there.
Best advice you've ever given.
Because all we got between here and that is just a bunch of bits. I'll probably make some stupid jokes. I'll call PK a little bitch a couple more times. We'll talk about Wrangler jeans who don't actually sponsor us. So that's all you're going to do.
I'll talk about scenarios that I've made up in my head that have nothing to do with the current season.
Yeah, exactly. We will call the Nashville Predators the Nashville Wild because Sean doesn't know his own team name and we'll be out. So
yeah. There
you go. So we can skip all that.
Real quick, while we're kind of on the subject, does Carey Price retire a Montreal Canadian?
Ooh, I like that question. That's a new bit called "Does Carey Price retire a Montreal Canadian?" I think so. I actually do think so. Because look, we're obviously keeping him at the next contract.
Yeah,
and we're going to give him, you know, what the fuck, 6-7 years? I would expect. And that takes him into his mid-30s.
Yeah.
So maybe he leaves after that, but that would surprise me. I wouldn't be surprised if we have him the whole way. I mean, the same could be said, does Henrik Lundqvist spend his whole career with the Rangers? There's a chance, I suppose, that at the end of Lundqvist's career, he's no longer with the Rangers, but I expect he'll be there the whole time, and I would think the same for Price. But then again, you know,
yeah, I mean, that's
Jerome McGinley's on, what, his seventh team now after being forever in Calgary. It's easy to say no now, and then guys always do weird shit at the end of their careers.
Let's say we don't even count. Let's say even if he does the Marty Brodeur thing and does a year in St. Louis.
Oh, all those years with the Blues. Legendary St. Louis Blues netminder Marty Brodeur.
Let's say we don't. Let's say we don't even count that. Like,
yeah.
He spends the vast, vast, vast majority of his career in Montreal, right?
Yes, absolutely.
I mean, he's already there, pretty much.
Well, yeah, he's been there long enough that he passed Ken Dryden on the all-time Habs win list now.
Yeah.
Like, he's still not even 30 years old, but he's been a Hab for quite a while now.
Yeah, and there haven't been, you know, maybe early on in their careers, there are some whispers, but he's been pretty much a model citizen for quite a few years now. Like, it doesn't seem like he's going to get driven out of town for any locker room or personality reasons.
No, absolutely.
And frankly, if the locker room's divided, he's the one guy who could probably get away with it.
Yeah, well, he got Michel Therrien fired, so
yeah,
it's his team.
Yeah.
I say that only tongue-in-cheek, but only slightly.
Only slightly. I think you are right, and I think, listen, you know, we said all along that as goes Carey Price, so go the Habs. And if you lose Carey Price, you've pretty much lost the team. And it seems like that's kind of what happened with Therrien.
Yeah, I think that is what happened. Because holy shit, has he been good. Which brings us to our next bit. Wrangler. Real. Comfortable. Jeans. And right now, their spokesman, Carey Price, has a real good save percentage. He has been ridiculous since Claude Julien has taken over. He's back to that guy that we saw at the beginning of the season on all of his last healthy season. Like, he's He's like Clayton Kershaw again to do that bit that everyone hates where we love to compare hockey players to baseball players for some reason.
Yeah, he looks like himself again, and maybe he would have, you know, it seems like he's too good to have played as crappy as he was for the rest of the season, and maybe he would have dug himself out of that hole regardless of the coaching change, but it really does seem like something was going on there. And it, like you said, it kind of, the moment of that stare down, his numbers tanked, yeah. And then, like, literally the moment Julien walked through the door, he, you know, snapped his fingers and he's back to 930 save percentage or whatever it is. Yeah. So.
No, it's, I mean, it's been great because I wasn't actually concerned that he would never get it back, obviously, because I had a lot of faith in Carey Price. But before the end of the season, you don't know. It could be something he needed to work out. But, I mean, I think when all said and done, we'll barely remember that blip now. He's just back into peak Price, as we were calling it early in the season.
Yeah.
Here's a question for you.
Ooh.
Can he play his way back into the Vezina conversation?
I would think so.
Especially because they fucking...
I don't know if anyone's really running. I mean, Hobie's probably... Hobie and Dubnyk are the
one
and two front runners,
yeah.
Right now, right?
I think so.
I don't even really know who number three on the list would be.
Briz, I guess?
Who?
Not Briz Gallup. The other one. The one that...
Bobrovsky?
Bobrovsky. Thank you.
Listen, Briz gets my vote for in perpetuity, but...
let's talk about aliens.
it's not like any of them are running away with it, and especially Bobrovsky's not. So
no.
I could see him muscling his way back into the conversation, especially given his reputation and his track record.
Yeah.
And especially because we've seen these awards are, you know, Corey Perry won the Hart because he got hot in the last 25 games of the season. Like,
yeah.
I could, you know, if Price is just lights out between now and the end of the season.
Oh, yeah, he could pull himself back into that. Because you're right, there is absolutely nobody else. It's Holtby, it's Dubnyk, it's Bobrovsky. And after that, like, really nobody else is... Carey Price is probably still in fourth place, really.
Yeah, and I mean, Lundqvist is out for the next couple weeks.
Yeah, and he wasn't in the conversation, really. He's had a rough season. He's aging.
Yeah, he's getting up there. I could see him getting the invite. It'd be hard to win the thing, although I don't even know if that's impossible.
At this point, I think Dubnyk's going to win it.
But don't underestimate how much recency bias plays in these awards.
Oh, recency bias. Thanks for that. Yeah, after every game, I do a little mini-pod called The Recency Bias. Feel free to check that out. But no, you're right. Absolutely.
And for years, it has been the kingmaker of Vezina trophy voting.
Also true.
I was trying to make.
That's a very strong point, even though this is the first season I've done it. He could, and like, especially with his history, right? Like, he was going to win it as long as he was himself this year. He had a dip, and it was well talked about. It wasn't as if it went unnoticed by the voting. But because he's Carey Price, you know, if he continues to allow only one goal a game, posts some big shutouts, and helps Montreal, you know, especially in these games against Ottawa coming up when they play them three times in five games, if he goes out there and is, you know, lights out and shuts the door and gets his save percentage back up above, you know, 940 over the season, I think he could still have a slight chance of winning it. He would have to be amazing down these final, whatever it is, 13, 12 games they've got, but I think he could do it.
Yeah, you're right. It's probably unlikely because Dubnyk's been fantastic, but he's widely considered, and justifiably so, but he's almost unanimously considered the best goalie in the world.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that helps, right?
Oh, for sure. It's the whole, I mean, your reputation does help in a large, like, there's a few seasons early in his career when I thought, you know, this is called the Montreal Bias, there's bias in here, but I did think there was a few seasons earlier before he finally won the Vezina and the Hart, where he should have been a Vezina nominee, but just didn't have the pedigree of, say, Lundqvist at that time when he was still getting nominations, or I think even Brodeur might have still got a nomination at that point, or Luongo. At some point, you earn it that as long as you are your regular self, people are going to be considering you for it.
Yeah.
Like Greg Maddux and the Cy Young Award in the early 90s.
Nicely done. Nicely
thanks. Yeah. Always here to do 90s baseball references. The most obvious connection that our listeners want. All right. Time to get into the confession bit, Sean.
Ooh.
Yeah, and it's exciting this week because I know confession in the past has been me just admitting something I don't really want to admit. This week I kind of want to play it as if it's a scene from a scary movie.
Oh, my.
Okay, so... and find myself... Okay. Sean, I have something to confess.
Oh.
God, you're good.
Yeah.
The Lightning aren't dead.
Are they calling from inside the house?
I don't know.
Is this how this works?
It's one of the tropes. But the Lightning aren't dead, bud.
I know.
Ugh.
I hate these Fakakta standings, but they're not.
They're, I think, 4 points out right now. They just beat Minnesota. We're recording this on Saturday afternoon as they're about to play the Panthers on Saturday night in the Battle of the Sunshine State. Everyone's favorite.
That's a big game.
That is a big game. Might even turn it on since the Habs are only playing on Sunday against the Oilers.
Is there anything worse, brief aside, is there anything worse than a Saturday night where they don't play?
No, it's so, I hate it. It throws my week off. And especially coming on the heels of a fucking 10 o'clock game on Tuesday and a 9 o'clock Thursday game.
Yeah.
It's just been a messed up week for hockey watching. So, not happy with that. Are you scared of Lightning?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Me too. At least they don't have Bishop anymore.
They don't make the playoffs, but if they sneak in, like...
Yep.
This division is wide open, man.
No, they could waltz right in and walk away and find themselves in the Eastern Conference Final yet again, at the very least. That would not shock me at all.
Yep. I mean, we say that, and I know it's rare that teams, you know, eke in and then flick the switch, but, I mean, L.A. did it. L.A.'s done it twice.
Yeah. And they're very much in that model, I think, of what L.A. was in terms of talent and expectation, you know, 3-4 years ago.
Yeah, so I think, I mean, we talk every week about how horrible this division is, but they sneak into that eighth spot and we have to play them in the first round? Like, ooh.
Well, if they get into the eighth spot, we won't be playing them in the first round.
Yeah, fair enough.
It would only be at most in the second, and even that seems difficult. Because that's the thing.
Yeah.
The Habs are either going to face likely Boston if Ottawa manages to pass them and finally take the Atlantic, or they're going to be playing whichever team is really good out of the Met that is stuck in that second or in that first wild card spot.
Yeah.
And they'll be good, and it'll probably be the Rangers.
Yeah, so I mean, I guess if Tampa snuck in, they'd probably play Washington, right?
Yeah.
Which...
Wouldn't that be exactly what would happen to Washington? Out in the first round because Tampa sneaks in and is actually a good team that can give them can challenge them a little?
Yeah.
Oh, man. That would be so Washington.
Oh, man.
That's a new bit called That's So Washington.
I knew this, but I didn't know this. I was reminded this week that, I mean, we all know that Ovi hasn't, you know, won the cup. I kind of forgot. They haven't even gotten to the conference final.
No. Montreal's been to the conference final twice in, like, the last 5 years.
I know. That is insane.
7 years. Yeah. They know. They've struggled, man. They're the regular season winners, but they cannot put it together.
And I want to believe that this is the year, but, I mean, it's kind of hard to, right?
I don't know. I mean, we haven't talked since the trade deadline. And really, the only super relevant thing that happened at the trade deadline was the Shattenkirk trade. I mean, they are lethal.
They are. And they've got a lot of guys up after this year. Like, it's not going to be the same team that they roll back next year. So it's not now or never, but, you know, they're getting close.
Maybe this is the year.
I mean, we laugh, but San Jose, you know, sometimes you
yeah, San Jose finally lost the Stanley Cup.
Yeah.
Good for them. That final step of losing, they've done it all. Yeah, Lightning taking them out in the first round, that would be, I don't want to say awesome, but it would be something.
It'd be funny.
It would be funny. As a non-Capitals fan. okay.
I can't see them beating Pittsburgh, though.
They're good. We were picking them to win the cup at the beginning of the year. I could see them beating anybody.
I know. Pittsburgh looks really good, though. Like, if I had to pick right now, I think they repeat.
Yeah, but everything changed. I mean, you wouldn't have said that about Pittsburgh last year at this time, that they were headed for the cup.
Yeah, that's true.
Playoffs are a whole different thing.
Yeah.
Speaking of Pittsburgh, time for our who's the greatest skater in the world bit. We got the Habs versus Connor McDavid, Price v. McDavid, as you like to really pump up. Let's hear it one more time.
Price?
Yeah.
McDavid.
Wow. Electric. Electric. Whoa. That's why we get you on here. So at this point in the season, in our constant battle back and forth, who's the best?
McDavid's got 75 points. Crosby's got 70. Crosby leads the league in goals. I think McDavid's having a better season.
Yeah, if I was voting Hart, if they would give us a vote, but they don't because they're jerks. And though I write them every other day, can we vote, please? Nothing. But I would vote for McDavid as the Hart winner.
Yeah.
But is that
Gino's having a good year too, man.
That's going to be the name of his biography.
I'm also having a good year.
Well, just yeah, exactly. Gino's having a good year too, eh? Just the Evgeny Malkin story. By far the most underrated player of our generation. Not even close.
Yeah, Timmer Thornton.
I suppose. I don't know. I feel like I don't forget about Thornton, whereas I do forget about how good Malkin is.
Yeah, that's fair. But like, there are people out there who still don't think Joe Thornton's a Hall of Famer.
I know. I mean, when we did our 100, I would have had him in there, I think. But, yeah, it's crazy. What the hell's wrong with you if you don't think Joe Thornton's a Hall of Famer, though?
I know.
What's the argument there? How could he possibly not be? Because he didn't win? We just said he lost the Stanley Cup. It's a stupid
argument, but that's the only – I can't see what other argument people would even make.
I guess because he's been a Shark and that's not the most – like, if he was on, I don't know, Detroit or obviously Chicago, since all you have to be is mediocre and on that team and you're one of the 100 greatest players of all time. But, you know, if he was in somewhere that was more a traditional hockey market, if he was a New York Ranger, there'd be no question about that.
No, absolutely not.
Like, if Henrik Lundqvist never wins a Stanley Cup, is it questionable whether or not he's a Hall of Famer?
No, we kind of pick and choose who gets labeled with the bust label.
I mean, those Henrik's good looks alone, but yeah, Thornton's beard should go in, so. New bit I like to call, speaking of beards, we'll go to you on this one as our most bearded co-host. And by that, I mean you have a beard and I don't. Yeah. what do you think of Jordy Benn?
He has been a lot better. Like, I kind of like the pickup. I thought he was like a decent, you know, number six defenseman almost. Yeah. He's right now, he looks like more than that.
Yeah, I agree. And what about
the point where people are talking about protecting him in the expansion draft, and I kind of think that may be a good idea.
Oh no, what if we lose Alexei Yemelin? Please don't. and what about the beard? How do you grade that bad boy?
Ooh, that's does he have the second best beard in the league?
So what are we going? We're going, who's got number one?
I mean, Burns has
it's a wild man. It's out of control, but you can't argue with it. Joe Thornton's the other guy.
Thornton's is pretty good.
Yeah, but Ben's is thick and well cut. It's very Yukon Cornelius. I do see the people making that comparison on Twitter, and it adds up to me, especially the rouge nature of it all.
But Thornton's got sort of the salt and pepper hobo-esque look.
Yeah. Walking around shirtless as he likes to.
I'm gonna go Burns 1, Thornton 2, Ben 3.
So those are the beard power rankings in the NHL.
Beard power rankings, but that's still the highest ranking beard we've had since
long time.
I can't think of anyone with a beard.
No, we did. It's been a long time since the Habs have had a real good beard. Pattern, I guess. I mean, at least Dallas, in their defense, managed to get some beard back, and Pattern has had a decent beard at points, but. You're right. I can't even think of a decent comparison in Habs. Is it the greatest beard in Habs history? Holy shit.
It probably is.
Wow. You know, this is why you listen to this podcast. No other podcast is talking about this.
Accurate.
All right.
Beards. David Letterman's rocking a great beard these days.
Oh, yeah. I read that article. Letterman's beard is amazing these days. It's in the – I put it in the Joe Thornton category.
Yeah. Yeah, he's not a Ben. He's a Thornton.
And there was a great picture I think I retweeted from my account. You can follow me at ZachDropTweets. Where Michael Stipe, who also has a I retired and grew a giant beard. So Michael Stipe took a picture of himself and his beard beside a picture of, I think it's New Yorker magazine and Letterman's beard. And I felt that I was one of the few people on earth who would truly appreciate everything about that picture.
I'm a little disappointed Jamie Benn wasn't included in this conversation.
Well, I mean, there's
0% chance Michael Stipe knows who Jamie Benn is, but that's fine.
That's
not Jamie Benn, Jordy Benn.
Jordy Benn. Yeah, he probably knows Jamie Benn. He's a big Stars fan, I think. He knows the league leaders, obviously. It's Michael Stipe. Yeah,
doesn't know number four defenseman. That's fine.
That's fine. I'm not here to knock Michael Stipe's knowledge of the NHL. Wow, we are just really playing to ourselves on this one. which means...
This is wildly off topic.
It's okay. It means it's time to bring in Mark Gretschmel to talk about the California Golden Seals story. All right, now we're talking with Mark, the man behind the California Golden Seals story. Mark, thanks so much for coming on. Great to have you here.
My pleasure to talk to Montreal.
Yeah, glad to have you aboard, giving a little chat about a hockey team that, despite the fact that it kind of has an important part in the NHL expansion history, I have to say, literally knew nothing about until I watched your documentary.
Yeah, that's right. You know, it's been a while. The Seals played their last game, I think, 41 years ago in April. So, you know, definitely you have to be of a certain age to remember seeing them play, but their story is kind of timeless. You know, it was a franchise that, you know, had lots of problems, and that still exists today. So their story is pretty unique. You know, they're kind of the hockey franchise where everything that could possibly go wrong did go wrong.
That's, I think, the most intriguing part to me of the documentary, just seeing, like, oh my God, so many poor choices were made.
Yeah, I mean, where do you start? You start with trading away future draft choices that cost them the chance to get Guy Lafleur. That's one of them. You know, was it the decision to sell the team instead of selling it to a guy who was based in the Bay Area and knew sports promotion? They sold it to Charles O. Finley, the guy who owned the Oakland A's baseball team, who famously said it at the first press conference in a film about his, I don't know the first thing about hockey. And everybody wondered why the guy who had only been to one hockey game in his entire life decided to buy a hockey team. You know, was it the decision that Finley made to duplicate his Oakland A's and have his hockey players wear white ice skates, which made them the instant laughing stock of the NHL, and which players today say that's the first thing that people bring up is when they mention the Seals are the famous polar bear white ice skates.
For sure, and that was like the thing I knew about them. Really, I didn't know the Guy Lafleur thing. And as much as I want to chat about that with you, I think people should just watch a documentary to get that story for Montreal fans. I know that's a fascinating element. The fact that Guy Lafleur might not have been a member of the Habs had California played it right, but I want people to check it out to get into that. What I find more interesting, I think, is your story in making the documentary. And firstly, and you just being a fan of this team, that, you know, I'm a Montreal Expos fan, so I understand having a team that I think a lot of people kind of treated as not quite legit historically, although the Expos have had fair bit of benefit in the years since they have no longer existed. I think people have reevaluated them. California Golden Seals, not the case. The reevaluation has almost forgotten them in a way. I think a lot of people don't even realize they were part of that first six-team expansion that included, you know, the St. Louis Blues, among others. So give me a little bit, and you do get this in the documentary, but give me a little bit about your story of how you came to be a hockey fan in California and what the team meant to you.
Well, my story is I'm actually a transplanted Canadian. I was born in Vancouver, and when I was seven, my folks moved to Northern California. And so in 1967, when I was 9 years old, you know, the Oakland Coliseum Arena was about a 5-mile drive from where we lived. the new NHL, they were actually the California Seals, and they became the Oakland Seals, and they became the California Golden Seals. They started playing, and, you know, and I just, you know, fell in love with hockey. You know, I think like a lot of Canadian kids, my brothers and I had one of those early hockey sets, you know, where you had choice between Montreal and Toronto, and then I was Montreal, and we played on the hockey set. We go to Seals games, and then we play street hockey against our garage door in the backyard. So, we would go to games, throughout the 9 seasons they were in the NHL, and I was a huge fan. And, so it was pretty traumatic when they left in 1976. They probably would have stayed because they were just getting better at the time, but there was the new arena that they wanted to build in San Francisco fell through, and they wound up moving to Cleveland. But after that, my normal job is I'm a television producer in documentaries, and I worked in TV news for 20 years and did a couple of stories about the history of the Seals. Worked in the Sacramento, and I did a story about the San Jose Sharks when they started up, and then years later, like living in Los Angeles where I live now, making the world a better place, doing shows like Lindsay Lohan, The Road to Jail. One day I was sitting around thinking, you know, I'd really like to do something longer about the Seals. You know, I'd like to, you know, with the anniversary of the NHL, the expansion coming up in the 100th anniversary. So I started this about 2.5 years ago, and I kind of did it on a micro budget. You know, I wasn't sure where the money would come from, and I traveled across Canada and the U.S. with my video camera and my, you know, lighting gear and sound gear. And I tracked down about 30 former players and team officials and journalists and fans, and just started getting their stories. And then did a couple of crowdfunding campaigns. You know, I threw a Hail Mary, and I put in a request to Wayne Gretzky to do an interview. He agreed and sat down.
Yeah,
you know, people started sending me, you know, Instamatic photos they took at games back in the 70s. You know, found old film footage that hadn't been seen in 40 years. Found in somebody's closet, a broadcaster's closet, we found an old 2-inch videotape that had Seals highlights, which haven't been seen since that game aired. So we wound up getting a tremendous amount of really rare visuals. So that was very gratifying.
I think the biggest whoa moment for me watching the doc was Gretzky's appearance, which...
Yeah,
especially because you kind of talked to him in a time when things were, and maybe this was to your advantage, he was kind of in a chill period with the NHL when they weren't really speaking to one another. So to see, I was like, Wayne Gretzky, holy hell, how did that come together?
Yeah, you know, I was living in Edmonton. I started my TV career up in Edmonton in the early 80s, right, yeah, during the height of the Oilers dynasty up there. And I would see Wayne Gretzky play a lot. I would see him a lot, you know, around the city. But I'd never met him, and when I was making up my list of people, I had read that the very first NHL game he had ever seen in person was a Seals game in Toronto that his grandmother took him to see when he was 5 years old. And so I had talked to his manager, his then manager, once. I emailed him, told him who I was, and he said, well, you know, I don't represent Wayne anymore, but this is who does represent him. Here's his email. You know, send him a message, tell him that I talked to you, and see where it goes. And I did that. They said, well, we'll get back to you. And then a week later, they said, Wayne wants to do this. So I was flabbergasted, but I was very, very happy about it. And he could not have been nicer. You know, he knew the history of the team. He knew about the white skates, about Charles Finley. You know, he knew personally growing up the families of two other players. And so, you know, he talked about when he was a kid, you know, watching the Seals play, and how his dad would tell him and said, you know, Wayne, you should hope that teams like Oakland and Pittsburgh and Philadelphia do well, because if they do well, that means there's a bigger market for hockey and there's more chance for a guy like you to play in the NHL. And that really stuck with him. So I'm very grateful for Wayne for doing that.
I get the sense he might have made it in the NHL if there was only one team.
Yeah, maybe. Although, you know, when you think about it, when there were only six teams, boy, that was there were a lot of really great players who never got a chance to play.
Oh, that's crazy.
Yeah, but I'm sure the cream would have gone to the top top of the soup there. So
okay, so you're a former fan. There are people who still have some memories of the Golden Seal. What is the kind of memory at this point? What is the lingering fan base, for lack of a better word? What's the kind of feeling towards the history of this team now? That you know, especially now that you're out there talking to people about it.
Well, there's like a big novelty. There's a novelty around them that doesn't exist around a lot of other teams because they were kind of an oddity. They were out in California where there wasn't a lot of hockey. You know, I remember as a kid when the Seals started, there were only 3 ice skating rinks in the entire San Francisco Bay Area.
Oh,
you know, when I lived in Edmonton, I could walk to 3 rinks just like walking distance from where I lived. You know, it wasn't a sport that a lot of people were familiar with. You know, the players I interviewed, they all talk. I mean, to a man, they all talk about a week doesn't go by when they don't get 3 or 4 letters in the mail with hockey cards or programs or pucks that people want signed. So there's a kind of a novelty around the team that exists to this day.
Of course, then California goes on to become, I mean, I don't know that hockey is obviously not the biggest sport out there, but as far as for those of us who are hockey fans, the California teams have largely been over the last decade some of the best in hockey. It's crazy that it was kind of, this road was paved by the Golden Seals.
Yeah, that's part of the Gretzky connection. You know, when Gretzky was traded from Edmonton to Los Angeles, you know, L.A. went from their attendance to, you know, getting 8,000-9,000 fans a game to suddenly having sold out season tickets, you know, which led to the Anaheim Ducks starting up, which led to, San Jose, the DNA of the Seals are with the San Jose Sharks. So, in fact, you know, you talk about, you know, the legacy of the Seals. It was too late to include this in the film, but on January 7th, I believe it was, the Seal of the Sharks had a California Seals tribute night. And, you know, since the Sharks started up in 91, they kind of held the Seals at a bit of an arm's distance because it was kind of a fail. Well, it was a failed franchise. But on that night, and I brought my video camera, and I shot the highlights, and they're up on YouTube. But they had a tribute night. They honored 6 of the former Seals players. Everybody who came got a free T-shirt, and the Seals players. And I was with them before, during, and after. They weren't sure what was going to happen. They were saying, you know, "Will anybody really care? I mean, does anybody really want to meet with us? Or will anybody even applaud when they introduce us?" And when they before the game, when the fans were arriving, they set up a big, long autograph table where the 6 Seals players sat. And when the doors opened, within 5 minutes, they were mobbed. People were lined up 5, 6 deep trying to get autographs from these players. People were bringing sticks from 1972 that they said, "You signed this for me, when I was a little kid, and I was stayed after the game." And so there was just an incredible amount of affection for this team. And I had never seen so many Seals jerseys in one place as that night. And the funny thing is, back then, the NHL wasn't selling replica NHL jerseys. So these were all like knockoffs that they had bought from, different places or illegally or made themselves or got through the vintage NHL collection. So it was pretty wild to see all that.
What was the, outside of obviously getting to do this project and see it through, what was your kind of favorite moment of creating this movie, which is, tells a story of something that you love so much? Was there anything that you discovered about the team, or was there anything that was like kind of an aha moment while you were working on it?
Well, I loved hearing the guys' stories because, a lot of really great players played for the Seals.
Yep.
Like Reggie Leach and Charlie Simmer and Dennis Mrook and Jill Milosh. But just hearing their stories about, the fun moments. I mean, one of my favorite stories was, back then the teams would all sports teams, they were flying around on commercial planes. They would book a flight with, the public to be on the same flight. So they didn't have the charters back then. And they all flew coach. And Charlie Finley, well, one of the nice things he did was he realized how, being from California, how far they had to fly for road trips.
Yeah.
So he dictated that their team the SEALs would fly first class when they were on the long flights. And no other NHL team was doing that. And the players told a story about, because the 747 was pretty new at that time, and they described they'd never been on one before, and they got on the plane, and one of the guys went up the steps to the upper deck. He looked around, he went to the bathroom, he stripped down to his shorts, splashed water all over himself. He came down the steps and then announced to the other players, "Hey guys, come on up, you know, the pool is great," you know, so the guys would have a lot of fun.
So what's this movie's available on iTunes, that's where people can find it, but what's next for what you do with this from here on out?
Well, I had to do a licensing agreement with the NHL.
Okay.
To show broadcast game footage, you have to pay a fee. And I can afford the one outlet, which is the iTunes. So if you go to, if you just Google or go to iTunes and the California Golden Seal story, you can find it there, and you can either buy it and download it, or you can rent it and watch it. And that's pretty much where it lives right now.
I gotta say, I really enjoyed it. Truly, it was something, a chapter of hockey history that I had really not much of an idea of at all. I thought you did a really fantastic job just deep diving into it. And there was part of me, absolutely, as an Expos fan, who got whatever that feeling is of that is part happiness, part deep sadness, part, you know, thick nostalgia of revisiting something that you could tell somebody had a true love for and really wanted to express their appreciation for, and brought more people into it. You know, getting Wayne Gretzky to think back to his days of watching the Golden Seals. I thought that was just a really interesting kind of look at something that for a lot of younger fans now just have no idea of.
Yeah, no, I appreciate you saying that. You know, that's been nice to me, because some people say, well, who's going to care about this hockey team that played 40 years ago? But some of the stuff is kind of timeless. You know, these guys telling the stories about, you know, that they're drafted, and the very first time they ever see an NHL game in person is the NHL game that they play in with the Seals. And they talk about back then making, you know, $20,000, $30,000 a year salary, you know, not like they do today. Ron Stackhouse, the defenseman, telling the story about on his first game being on the ice with Gordie Howe, who, you know, was, you know, near the end of his first NHL career, but was, you know, a hockey god, and running into him on the ice and saying that he felt he should say, "Excuse me, sir." You know, so those stories, I think, kind of might resonate with a lot of people.
All right, and so finally, to button this thing, tease out the smallest bit of the LaFleur story, because I do want people to watch it and check it out for themselves, but just give us a bit of the premise here.
Well, basically, the Seals were desperate to improve their team, because the first couple of years they were really struggling, and they were, like, bleeding money, and they needed to improve their product, so They started trading away their first round draft choices to get good players right away. And Montreal and the Seals, they did a lot of trading, and the draft choice that the Seals used, or the players, the draft choice that the Seals gave up 1 year, the Canadians used the following year to get Mr. LaFleur. And, you know, he might not have been the player he had been, he became with the Seals, but, you know, it's Ernie Hickey, one of the players of the Seals, God, he's reminded pretty much every week. He says, yeah, they come up to me, strangers, and say, "The worst trade ever. How does that feel?" You know, so, yeah.
It's truly fascinating. We've only lightly touched on it here. The ownership stuff is amazing to find out about. It's not just the story of a hockey team. I think it's just a story of a business run in a very interesting way. Really highly recommend to listeners, check it out. As I say, you find it on iTunes. You search Golden Seals. It should come up pretty quickly, I think. Not a ton of movies made about them. So you filled that space very nicely. Thanks so much for coming on. Really appreciate that. And what's next for you?
Next, I'm actually just working on my normal day job as a TV producer and other projects there. So, So the film's been entered in a few film festivals, and I'm actually going up to Red Deer, Alberta at the end of the month because it was accepted into a film festival there. So I'm looking forward to that and meeting maybe some of the people who have seen the film.
Awesome. Well, thanks again for coming on. Really appreciate it, and best of luck with this.
Okay, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Thanks. So my thanks again to Mark for coming in, talking some California Golden Seals, and as he mentioned, you can find that on iTunes. It's a fun watch. So we're coming out of the interview here, Sean. It's time to do your favorite, my favorite, maybe even the listener's favorite bit, the mid-podcast interview. I know last week you did the interview, and I was the interviewee, but if I may, I'd like to volunteer to once again be the interviewee this week, because I would like to do the mid-pod interview in tribute to Phil Kessel this week.
How's your breath?
This podcast. Mark Chris Williams is a Golden Seals. Yeah. And there you go. That's our tribute. What's that?
Are you okay?
That's yeah, it's going to be good. There you go.
Are you a lozenge or something?
He was so, did you see that interview?
Yeah, I did.
Man, was he out of breath. It was ridiculous. It was like me after taking a shift in like broom hockey or something. Like, what is happening, Phil? I'm pretty sure you play this all the time, but he must have just been giving her on that final shift before the break.
One of the great things about Phil Kessel and one of the great like weird stats in the NHL right now is that I think he's like fourth in consecutive games played or something.
I know. He's consistent. He's fast. He's healthy. He was great in the playoffs last year. He's all the things you wouldn't expect from a winded fat guy. And yet.
I know. We give him so much shit for being out of shape, and he's played like 600 games straight or something.
Oh, no.
Whereas, you know, Rick DiPietro was ripped beyond belief, but he couldn't play more than three straight games.
If Kessel looked, you know, conventionally like an athlete, we'd be all talking about what a specimen he is. Instead, we all talk about what a specimen he is in a very different way. That's why he's my idol, man. That was just another classic Phil Kessel moment to add. I mean, we were wondering if, we enjoy for no reason looking to the future and trying to guess what's going to happen. Like, will Price be a Hab forever? How about this one? Is Phil Kessel a Hall of Famer?
Oh. Probably not.
I hope he doesn't go in because I want to open up the Montreal Bias Hall of Fame and he gets in that one.
It's not. I mean, let's see how the rest of his career plays out.
Wow, what a take!
Stupid thing to say. What I'm trying to say is he's not on pace right now. But if a couple things happen, if he wins another cup, if he wins a Conn Smythe,
he should have won one.
He should have won one already. Yeah, if he leads the league in goals one year, which is still plausible.
I guess so. Seems less likely these days, so. Though. Especially if he's that out of breath.
Right now, I'd say no, but if he has a little bit of a late career surge, you know, I could see him getting in. Fair Especially enough. If they win, like, another cup or two.
Yeah, if they win it again this year, he starts to really put himself in that spot.
Yeah.
But he played poorly, or at least perceived poorly, while he was in Toronto, so that will always hurt him.
Yeah, it will. Meanwhile,
Matt Sundin, one of the 100 greatest players ever. Phil Kessel, number two player of all time, if you ask me. Number two fat player.
Honestly, I would take Kessel in his prime over Sundin, wouldn't you?
I think so.
I think I would. I've never maybe given Sundin quite enough credit, but I still feel like Sundin. I still feel like Pete Kessel is more dangerous than Sundin.
Pete Kessel. The greatest peak of all. New next bit, Vegas, baby.
Yeah.
They're a team now.
Yeah, it's official.
They have a player.
Yeah, they do.
They probably know a pretty decently right now who's going to be on their team because they were allowed to be part of secret handshakes and wink, wink, nudge, nudges on the trade deadline day. And apparently it might be their fault that deadline day sucks so hard.
Yeah.
I like that we're already blaming Vegas for things we don't like. That's perfect. It's not a work. But here's why I wanted to talk Vegas this week. Little concerned that the NFL is going to be coming in there so quick at right behind them. This could be crushing for them. I still think they'll get in there one season before they've got another pro team. But man, if the NFL rolls in there right off, that's really going to hurt the Golden Knights.
Yeah, it will.
R.I.P. Golden Knights. You had a good run.
Yeah, I know. I mean, you know, it's different times of year, and the NFL is so all-encompassing already that maybe it won't make that much of a difference, but I don't know.
Yeah, especially
all the casinos and all the hotels that we thought were going to comp all these tickets to Golden Knight games, you know, forget that. They're gonna send all their money to the Raiders instead.
Oh, yeah. I mean, and it's the perfect team to be in Vegas is the Raiders.
It is.
People, fucking idiots, can get dressed up as if they were, like, hardcore Oakland Raiders fans, even though they're just in from fucking, I don't know, Phoenix for the weekend or some shit. Like, yeah. It's perfect. It's perfect for Las Vegas. NFL, yeah. It's definitely what people would – it's once a week, so it's more of a big event. I guess that's the NHL's one advantage, and I don't even know if it is at least, like, the Raiders will only be playing on Sunday. I don't know. They're happening at the same time for the most part.
For the most part. I mean, I guess the advantage is, you know, you still need something to do sports-wise after February.
Do you? It's Las Vegas. I don't think you do.
Yeah. And, I mean, if the team's completely getting ignored in October, November, December, and January. Yeah.
Yeah. And they're going to be bad. The Raiders might be good.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not great. So the Quebec City Golden Knights in 2022.
What's a knight in French? We should know this, shouldn't we?
Yeah, we should.
Huh. I don't know. Maybe they'll just take the colors and not be the... They'll be the something AR. the Noir AR. Go, go. Noir AR, go, go. And for all of those listeners who didn't go to Sherbrooke University like I did, that was our team's rally cry.
What Chevalier.
A Chevalier, that's right.
Yes, the Chevalier d'Or.
That's pretty good. I'm excited. I actually think Phoenix is probably headed to Quebec City now, or Seattle maybe, but
yeah,
or Arizona, I guess.
For as stubborn as Bettman can be, like at some point you gotta fucking face the facts, right? Like yeah,
they're in a bad spot now.
Yeah.
Just
how many cards are they left to play?
Well, how many times have we said that though?
Yeah. True.
I mean, it's like The Walking Dead in that, like, every time you think, okay, this thing's done, nobody needs to add any more to this story. Oh, no, one more horror element of it that's not nearly as good as we all hoped it would be.
Yeah, it's so funny because Atlanta, like, it seemingly happened in, like, 3 weeks, right?
Yeah.
Where it's like, okay, this isn't working, we're pulling out, and, you know, they're off to Winnipeg. And we're, you know, Phoenix, it's been, what, 8 years now?
At least. I feel like it's been since they got there, but
yeah.
I guess that's not true. But
they've been on like life support for like 8 years now. It's not a decade.
Well, now once Shane Doan retires, they'll feel they can move that team. I mean, in everybody's defense, if Shane Doan is right in the middle of it, he thought the Arizona Coyotes were good until apparently a week ago. So maybe they just don't even know that they've hit rock bottom several times already. It seems like it's an unaware organization based on Shane Doan. They could be building something good, too. It might be a nice team to inherit.
Yeah, they have some nice young pieces. They're still a ways away, but...
Yeah. what else I got here? Oh, here's a good one. You get one. We haven't played this game in a while.
No, we haven't. I like this one.
You get one. Movie edition. I don't know what that sound effect was. You get one, Sean. Goon or Slapshot?
This might double down as my controversial opinion.
Ooh, I like that.
I'm going to go with Goon.
Yeah, me too.
So I like Slapshot, and I respect its influence, and it is a pretty funny movie.
And it had some boobies.
It had some boobies.
Which in your 10, that was big.
I'm not sure if it's, you know, like my dad literally thought Slapshot was the funniest movie that's ever been made. I wouldn't quite put it on that level. Like, it doesn't slay me when I watch it.
No, and I mean, comedy's tough. Comedy doesn't age well necessarily all the time.
Sure.
Unless it's like Ace Ventura, it's tough, but the obvious reference, the greatest standing comedy. Yeah, I'm going Goon 2, and if for no other reason, then Jay Baruchel, Habs fan, and we were buddies once, I claim. I was a background character on his YTV classic My Hometown one time, so me and the Birch, that's what I call him, we're close.
Yeah, Goon made me laugh more than Slapshot did.
Oh, for sure.
And now, will we still be referencing Goon in 40 years? Probably not.
Mm. Yeah, no, there's. I don't think there's any characters in Goon that are going to be as, and I'm air quoting here or not, you decide, iconic as the Hansen brothers. And there are some good, like, there's some great lines in Slapshot for as old as that movie is. Like, fuck him in the dick, that's just good.
the opening interview with the French goalie is one of my favorite things ever.
No, there's some good stuff in there. But yeah, I mean, I'm good. Yeah, let's give it to Goon. Goon wins.
Yeah. Where does the Mighty Ducks fall into this?
You took the words right out of my mouth. Look, I'm never, because of our age, I think I'll always ride for my hockey movie forever is that first Mighty Ducks, I'm afraid.
Yeah.
Just like my baseball movie will always be Angels in the Outfield, man. I was very, my sports movies are all Anaheim based, is my preference.
I was always more of a Little Big League guy.
What's the Giants, right? Oh, no, that was Little Giants. Little Big League was that baseball movie. Was Little Big League the Twins?
No, I'm thinking of the wrong one. The one where the kid breaks his arm and then he can throw 104 mile an hour.
Rookie of the Year.
Rookie of the Year. There we go.
Mm. Sandlot, actually, if we're being honest here.
Yeah.
What's your favorite sports movie?
Rocky.
Mm. Okay, not boxing, because boxing doesn't count. Not that it's not a sport, but, you know, boxing is just such a, it's its own thing almost.
Yeah. That is a good question. Can I say the Friday Night Lights TV show?
You can.
That would be my answer then.
Pretty good. I like that one. I'll always have a real soft spot for Field of Dreams.
Yeah, that's fair.
I'm sure if I watched it today, I'd be like, that movie sucks. But I remember it as being like hugely influential on me on just my love of baseball at a young age. And so I will defend Field of Dreams, but I'm not interested in watching it again like I might be some other sports movies.
Never.
There's a lot of good stuff to watch. You get Netflix, there's tons of stuff on there. I don't know if I need to revisit Field of Dreams. Plus, I think revisiting it wouldn't be good for it.
Yeah, you might be right about that.
Some, like, those early 90s movies, they are really of a time, and you have to leave them alone. Because you rewatch them, like, look, here's my controversial opinion. Forrest Gump, if you watch that movie, it kind of sucks now.
Yeah, it does.
So, come at me, Gumpers, but that movie kind of sucks. So, that's my bit of advice as well, is just stay away from those 90s movies. Remember them and leave them at that.
Yeah, I think you're onto something there.
Thanks. That's what we do this podcast for. anything else you want to get out of here before we get to the positive space?
No, I think that covers it.
We barely talked about the trade deadline. Anything there that jumped out at you?
What the hell is there to talk about?
Yeah, exactly.
We talked about Shatton. We talked about Bishop last time, I think.
Yeah, we did. All the trades were breaking as we did the last one.
I mean, I'll say this. Some people, you know, Bergevin got some heat for making kind of lower level moves, but listen, if there's not a move out there, there's not a move out there, right?
Well, and the most obvious one, too, was, like, Duchesne. But if Joe Sakic was really asking for Sergachev, Galchenyuk, and, like, our first, like, no thank you. Jesus, yeah, no. Not even, I wouldn't trade Galchenyuk straight up for Duchesne.
Yeah, I don't think I would either.
Let alone the only prospect we have, really. And then a first-round pick as well. Like, come on.
Yeah, like, the Duchesne and Landeskog things are for a separate discussion, but if that was the price, no thanks. And otherwise, there wasn't a lot out there.
Do you think, and I've heard I've heard this theory a bit now, is like Joe Sakic wasn't going to be allowed to make that big trade unless he was going to get those three pieces. That was the only, you know, the circumstance was you can't be doing that because we actually are going to bring someone else in to run this thing now.
I mean, I can't blame him.
Man, here's what I love. A couple things on this, actually. One, Detroit's in last. Colorado's in last. Imagine that 10 years ago or 15, 20, whatever it was. There was when that peak. Like, that seemed impossible. Yeah, Colorado's been going down for a while. But also, in that same vein, when Joe Sakic and Steve Yzerman took over the Lightning and Avalanche at about the same time, they always seemed very similar in their careers, I think, because they were captains of the two teams in that huge rivalry, both obvious Hall of Famers. I kind of was interested to see how they would play out against each other there, and man, Yzerman has kicked Sakic's ass. At this point, I think Joe Sakic's a really bad general manager.
I mean, it's hard to argue otherwise. I mean, they're on pace for what, like 60 points or something? Like,
well, and yeah, and they shouldn't be there either. You know what I mean?
No, shouldn't.
Like, they have that young core. They should have been able to put something together.
Yeah. And, you know, Varlamov's a decent goalie. Like, it is kind of weird that they're as shitty as they are.
Yeah. Patrick Wanu, man. Get the hell out of there.
19-44-3.
Jesus. And bad, too. Did you see that the other night? The breakaway when he passes backwards?
Sure did.
Holy shit, was that the Colorado Avalanche of this year? Man.
Yeah. Minus 88 goal differential.
Ooh, they'll finish minus 100.
Yeah. So it's not like they're shitty and getting bad luck. Like, that's what their record should be.
Remember 2 years ago when they were, like, flying high and everyone who hates any advanced stats was like, shut up, stats people. See, the Avs are good despite. Yeah. Yeah, about that now.
Yeah.
They're terrible. But they could, like, they could turn it around pretty quick if the right person is, I think, put in charge over there.
Yeah, because they've got a good goalie. You know, Tyson Barrie's a decent defenseman. And you move one of those guys, you sign a couple defensemen.
Yeah. They're not so far. I mean, I don't think they're close to contending or anything, but I think they could turn that around relatively decently.
They could be in the playoffs in 2 years' time.
Yeah. Not if Sakic remains in charge, though.
Yeah, probably not.
Shame. All right. Positive space. What's even in this week of where we were feeling bad about PK Subban being gone, what do you got?
Well, two things. The team looks pretty damn good under their new coach.
You didn't respond to this on the forum, so I'd like to get you here. Has Claude Julien turned them around?
Yeah, I would say so. I'm still not convinced they're a Stanley Cup contender.
No, that's fair. I don't think many people think that.
But I don't know if that's... Yeah, that's not the question. The question is they turn them around, and they're headed back in the direction. They're playing like they should be. If they're not a Cup contender, they're still maybe the, I don't know, 10th or 11th best team in the league.
Yeah.
Whereas they looked like probably the 25th best team in the league under Tarnier for the last month or so. So, yeah, I would say absolutely.
Yeah,
I don't think it's a mirage. I don't think it's the dead cat bounce. It's not just the new guy coming in and turning things around for 2 weeks. Like, he's a really damn good coach.
Mm-hmm.
I think this is who they will be under him.
That was going to be my positive space as well, is I do absolutely think that even if this season they don't have enough, and I'm with you, I don't think they're necessarily a Stanley Cup contender. I think they're a good team, not a great team. We've got Claude Julien for the foreseeable future, and I remain quite confident. And the first 8 or 9 games under him have done a lot to kind of boost that confidence in him, that he's actually going to be able to make decisions that I agree with a lot of the time, that I'm happy with. I mean, you already see it with Alexei Yemelin being a healthy scratch for a game. Everything that you are watching the game at home on the couch and yelling about frustrated, Claude Julien also seems to be doing. So at the very least, it's I'll be more content watching the games when it seems like the things that should be happening are happening.
Yeah, he is eminently less frustrating of a coach to watch.
Oh, man.
Was.
And like I was saying this on the recency bias the other day, he able to communicate with the press. Like, he gives answers, and that's so refreshing. Yeah. It's crazy.
Yeah.
Like, he explained why Alex Galchenyuk was on the second line and not the first, even though, obviously, Phil Deneau's been struggling for a long time. And he just kind of explained, you know, we think, A, this makes our attack a little more dynamic with scorers on a couple of lines, and B, you know, he just seems to be getting comfortable again after that injury and after he had some struggles for a bit. I'm not about to heap more defensive assignments on him or anything like that. Let's let him find his game again. And I was like, yeah, that makes sense. I'm here for that. Whereas Therrien just never wanted to offer us anything. Like, he had no concern whether or not we understood the decision-making, and that made it a lot easier for us to bitch about it when when there was no rhyme or reason, at least that we heard, to why it was happening. And so I suppose Julien is going to make his own job easier by simply communicating.
Yeah, that's absolutely right.
Well, that'll be fun. Boston and Montreal, if that does happen in the first round, that's going to be legendary.
Yeah, that would be great.
We'll see. Three games out of five coming up against the Sens. That's really the main thing the rest of the season, I feel.
I mean, yeah, it's kind of I guess it's not the division, but it kind of is.
If you don't have Pageau on your fantasy team, he's available. I'd grab him for this week, folks. It's going to be big.
Another team can win all three. I mean, that's the division right there.
Yeah. Yeah, I suppose if they split or some games go, you know, they all go in OT or something like that, it won't be the division. But I do feel like the Atlantic's going to be decided in that stretch.
Yeah.
Or go a long ways to be decided. All right, that'll do us. My thanks again to Mark Gretschmel for coming on, talking about the California Golden Seals story. As I say, you can find that on iTunes. Check it out. All you got to do is search Golden Seals. Turns out there's not a ton of documentaries made about that team.
Yeah.
We're out of here. Highly recommend checking that out. It is just an interesting watch. You know, even as the league kind of goes into Vegas and stuff, I think there's something to be said of that. And as he mentioned, he's got Greg Wayne Gretzky on there. So it's good stuff. We're out of here. Follow me on Twitter at Zach Drops Tweets. He's at The O'Neill Factor. This podcast is at The Montreal Bias. Rabbit Habs is at Rabbit Habs. And, of course, I'll be back after the Oilers and Habs play on Sunday for a new episode of The Recency Bias the next morning. One more time, as we're out of here, Sean, pump us up. Price v. McDavid.
I prefer to call it McDavid v. Price.